It's past three and time for our play. Carter Brandon, his parents, his Uncle Mort, and a gallery of girlfriends appear in the sequel to Peter Tinniswood's play A Touch of Daniel. Christian Rodsker is the narrator, and Philip Jackson is Carter in Call It a Canary by Peter Tinniswood.
Snow lay thick on the moorlands. Snow drifted in mean-lipped skeins through the city streets. It settled on the eyebrows of traders in the covered market. It nestled in the gutters of mail-order warehouses. It snaked and it hissed over the slates of outside privies and back-street stables. It was the first day of spring. Carter Brandon returned home from his work in the maintenance shop of Wagstaff and Brooms. He went into the lounge diner. There was a letter propped up on the mantelpiece. It was addressed to him. He opened the envelope and read the following.
Dear Carter, I cannot stand no more. I and your son, Nigel, have left you for good and all. I intend to live with my gentleman friend. He works in the gas showrooms and has excellent prospects. I can no longer live with you and your selfishness and your drinking in pubs and twitching in your sleep with your mouth open and showing no consideration for myself and Nigel. You never, ever make an effort. I never want to see you again for the rest of my life. Your dinner's in the oven between two enamel plates on Regulo 2, and there is a junket in the fridge, or you can have a slice of Battenberg if you prefer, but don't cut it too thick as it has to last. I remain yours faithfully, your wife. Pat.
It was a 5:15 in the evening, and the 60s were limping listlessly to their close. Carter Brandon went into the kitchen and took out his dinner from the oven. It consisted of braised liver, mashed potatoes, peas, swede, and parsnips. He ate all the swede, but he left the parsnips. Then he put on his new suit and went out to the pub to meet his father.
Hi up, Carter.
Hey up. Do you fancy a game of crib?
Why not? It's better than trying to look cheerful. What sort of a day have you had, Carter?
Not bad. And yourself?
Not bad.
In the smoke-coiled silence, the barmaid yawned. She heaved at the strap on a brazier and began to pick the wax out of her ears with a purple plastic cocktail stick. After a while, Carter Brandon said,
Oh, I've just remembered.
What?
Pat's been and gone and walked out on me.
Mr. Brandon nodded slowly. He counted the cards in his hand. He puffed at his pipe contentedly. And then he said,
Bit of a devil, is that, isn't it?
I suppose it is, really.
Half an hour later, Uncle Mort entered the pub. His face was flushed, his hair was awry.
I've just had an altercation with a lady bus conductress.
Oh?
Aye. She was wearing these earrings, great big pendulous danglers they was, and one of them got caught in my braces button.
Well, it would, Mort.
I thought I was going to be stuck to it till we got to the terminus.
It happens, Mort, it happens.
Well, thank God the inspector got on at Dwyer Street Baths. He priced us apart with me all day's pensioner's bus pass.
And was it valid?
2 months out of date. Made me pay 9 pence full fare.
Well, he would, Mort, he would.
They drank 3 more pints of black and tan and 2 whiskey chasers. And then as Morris settled himself at the Hammond organ, clicking the joints of his fingers and coughing into his cuffs, they left. The snow had disappeared completely. The sun glowed rich and russet in the mist-licked dust. Gnats spiralled. They walked home. They passed the boarded-up and graffiti-scrawled Paragon Picture Palace, and Uncle Mort said,
What sort of a day have you had then, Carter?
Not bad. And yourself?
Not bad.
They resumed their walk. They passed by the wet battery shop, the Dolls Hospital, and the premises of Nat Silcock, herbalist, fishing-tackle specialist, and purveyor of surgical requisites.
Boy, I forgot to tell you.
What?
Pat's been and gone and walked out on me.
I see. Did she leave you sufficient supplies of toilet paper?
Oh, yes.
Well, in that case, lad, you're laughing. You're in clover, aren't you?
They found Mrs. Brandon wringing her hands and twitching her curlers.
Oh, dear, I've just heard news.
Smashing. Did you by any chance hear how we got on against Rochdale Hornets?
Oh, not that sort of news, Les. I'm talking about Pat's mother's news. She just rung to tell me Pat's gone and walked out on Carter.
Never mind that. What about our supper? I'm right clemmed, me.
Aye, so am I.
They had cream crackers, Cheshire cheese and pickled onions. After a while, Mrs. Brandon pinched the curl at the front of her head and said,
Didn't Pat give you no inkling then, Carter?
Not really.
Well, have you been out booting with lads and burning cigarette holes in front of your trousers?
No. Oh, there is one thing.
What, Carter? What?
Well, now come to think of it, she'd hardly spoke a word to me this past 10 or 12 days.
You see, I told you. And what does that signify? Well, come on, you men, what does it signify? Les, what does it signify?
Don't ask me. How should I know?
It's simple. It all boils down to a total breakdown in communications.
Oh, well, have you got to go all technical on us?
That's the whole trouble with marriage these days. People just don't know what to say to each other. As soon as novelty of being rude in bed wears off and lumps appear in the nuptial bolster, all you get is silence. Everything gets bottled up. Nothing's let out into the open. Husband and wife just don't know what to say to each other, do they, Les? Les!
Oh, sorry. Talking to me, were you?
At 11:30, Carter Brandon put on the jacket of his new suit and made for the door.
I'd best be getting off home.
The three men went to the front door, walked out onto the path, and breathed in the scents of the gentle spring night.
Champion, right champion.
Aye, it is that, Les. Oh, aye. I've just remembered. I've got a piece of news myself.
What?
I discovered a canary nesting in a bush on my allotment.
Well, what's so newsworthy about that?
Well, I'll tell you. For a kick-off, I didn't know canaries could exist outside a cage.
Of course they can't, Chuff. They're not like us married men, you know.
They waved goodnight to Carter Brandon. He grunted and plodded off into the darkness. Next day, he met Linda Preston outside the canteen at Wagstaff and Broome's.
Hey up, Carter. I'm dead sorry to hear news about Pat.
Hmm.
I'd help you out, willing, if you want a bit of nookie on the side to keep your hand in. Trouble is, I'm getting married next Saturday week.
Who to?
Count Jugular.
Is he that all-in wrestler bloke?
That's right. Do you want to come to the wedding?
I don't mind. It'll make a change.
Come on then, Carter. Tell me. What went wrong between you and Pat? Was it the bambino? Did you get jealous of it?
No, I never did think it was much to write home about.
Well, was it the old Aussie father routine in bed at night? Did you lose interest?
Not really. It made a change from doing the garden.
You Carter. Everyone used to say you was the perfect married couple. Pat with her pretty little backside, and you with them great, big, dreamy brown eyes. Everyone thought you were stickers for life.
Hmm.
You know, kid. I used to think love and marriage was a load of old cobblers.
Mm.
Then I met Count Jugular and he changed my mind completely.
Mm.
He's so house proud, you see, Carter. I mean, you should see his maisonette. Everything's so neat and tidy. His tea towels are spotless. And he's even got his spice rack in alphabetical order.
Mm.
Don't be a mug, Carter. Chase after her. Go crawling on your belly and make it up. But you was born to be a married man, kid. If you don't slink back to the fold, you'll just fade away and die.
She kissed him on the mouth. Her lips lingered. The tip of her tongue was moist. It trembled for a moment.
Hey, up, there's the Uta. I'll best be getting back to the maintenance shop.
See you, Carter.
See you, Linda.
He pushed open the pocked and rusting door of the maintenance shop, and Sid Skellorn looked up from his bench with a grin.
Hey up, Carter. Hey, I've just heard news about you, missus.
Oh,
you jammy devil. Hey, some people get out, look.
When Carter Brandon returned home from work that evening, he found Uncle Mort waiting for him in the lounge diner.
The French windows was open, so I let myself in and had a stale brown sauce sandwich.
Hmm.
There's a letter for you on the mantelpiece. I've not steamed it open yet.
It went thus.
Dear Carter, I waited in all night at Mother's for you to phone. Why didn't you? Not that it matters any road, as I've got myself a gentleman friend who is 6'2" in his stocking feet, with excellent table manners and a real bulldog pipe, which he smokes. He is very fond of Nigel and does tricks for him with the torch from his car, which has white wall tyres. He is a commercial traveller with excellent prospects, and I have met his mother. And you would like her. I remain yours faithfully, your wife, P. Brandon, Mrs.
What did it say, then, that letter? Out important?
Not really.
Letters never do. Hey, up. You know that canary I was talking about on my allotment?
Yes.
I think it's had an egg.
Why?
Because it sat on its nest with a smug look on its face, just like your mother had when she was carrying you.
Hmm.
You want to come and see it?
Why not? It'll make a change.
They went to Uncle Mort's allotment. It was tangled and overgrown with weeds. They made their way to Uncle Mort's shed, which was an old brake wagon from the Lancashire and Yorkshire Railway. It was aflutter with the first of the season's cabbage whites. It had tubs of dock leaves growing on the veranda and wild honeysuckle clinging to the iron chimney. Uncle Mort opened his mouth to speak, but before he could, a small, dull, olive-green bird shot out from a hazel bush which had spread its dark, brooding branches over the veranda.
There it is, my canary.
There's another one, too. It's just gone into the bush from the other side. There's two of them.
No wonder they've had an egg, then. Well, there's nowt else for them to do round here, is there? Tell you what, Carter... Put your nose into yon bush and see if it sat on its nest.
Right. Hey, up. It's not a canary. It's a warbler.
So what's the difference? It's got wings, hasn't it? It's got a beak and beady little eyes.
I bet it couldn't give a devil what clever dicks like you call it.
No, that's not the point. You don't see warblers like this in the north. They always live down south. These are rarities. Real rarities. Very, very rare indeed.
All right, all right. Keep your wool on. There's no need to be so enthusiastic. You'll bring yourself out in spots. Yeah. Rare, are they, then, these canaries, Carter?
Aye, they are.
Rare, are you, then, mateys? Well, I don't know what you're doing round these parts. Folks don't like rarities in the north. It goes against the grain, does anything out of the ordinary. I'd take care if I was you. Oh, aye. I'd take right good care.
Anyone who was anyone at Wagstaff and Broome's turned up to celebrate the wedding of Linda Preston and Count Jugular. Dorothy Fernley, from Complaints, said...
I thought the service was rubbish. Didn't you, Carter? The waiting room was filthy and you couldn't hear the acoustics proper during the responses, could you?
Hmm.
The reception was held in the upstairs room of the Whippet Public House, where popular mine host and ex-Green Howard Bert Coleridge and his better half Enid had provided a running buffet with individual trifles. Music was provided by Gordon Liptrot and the Smoky City Stompers. Carter Brandon went to the bar to fetch more drinks. On the way there, he was stopped by Dorothy Fernley from Complaints, who invited him to dance.
I don't think much to the group, do you, Carter?
They're not bad.
Not bad? They're rubbish. Have you seen the state of the drummer's socks? I think we should complain to the management, don't you, Carter?
Hmm.
He danced with Sandra Bullions from Stock Control. He danced with Connie Watkinson from Packing. He danced with Sharon Boot and Winifred Duffin. He danced with Leslie Pinsham and Anita Batley. He danced with Hayley Myerscough from Front Office. And then he was excused by Linda Preston.
My turn now, eh, Carter?
Hmm.
We're leaving at midnight, so I thought I'd have the last dance with you for old time's sake.
Ah, very much.
I've been watching you, kid.
Oh, I?
You daft devil. All those birds you've been dancing with, they're no good for you, kid. They're just a load of scrubbers. Get yourself back to Patch. He's the one for you, and you know it. You know it, don't you, Carter?
Ah, well,
And then midnight struck, and Linda Preston and her new husband, Count Jugular, set off in their hired navy blue Ford Cortina for their honeymoon on the North Wales coast. At 1:30, Carter Brandon was approached by Dorothy Fernley from Complaints.
Well then, Carter, looks like you're the only one what's left sober. You might as well take me home.
Pardon?
Take me home, Carter. You'll be all right. My mum and dad are away in the caravan at Bridlington. You're on, kid. You're on.
Ah, well, I don't think I'll bother Tar very much. I feel like an early night, if you don't mind.
You pig. You swine. You've set me up and now you've blown me out. Oh, I hate you. I loathe you.
Well, please yourself, love.
He sat in the dark corner and drank pints of strong lager and whiskey chasers. Sid Skellon fell off his stool. Sandra Bullions from Stock Control tripped against the bar and cut her chin on an ashtray. Sharon Boot was sick. And then a little voice from deep inside him said,
My God, the glamour of it all, eh, Carter? The romance, the deep fulfilment.
It was the voice of Uncle Mort's long-dead baby, Daniel.
Yuck, 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 eh, Carter? Yuck, yuck.
Carter Brandon awoke next morning at 11:30. He opened his eyes and groaned.
Oh, oh, hell.
The inside of his head thumped and clanked. His limbs ached. His mouth was parched and a sour band of stale acid gurgled round his heart.
Oh, struth. Ye guts.
And the little voice from deep inside him said,
You've got an hangover, Carter. You've got the mother and father of an hangover, me old wingsy bash. Oh, the glamour. Oh, the romance. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Carter Brandon staggered downstairs to the lounge diner. He opened the cocktail cabinet and with trembling hands poured himself a large, neat whiskey. He drank two more and then collected the newspaper from the front door letterbox. It was in a short paragraph in column 3 of the front page that he read the news that Count Jugular had been killed in a car crash at the well-known accident black spot at Wilson's Bar. Linda Preston was in intensive care.
Oh, Linda. Oh, Linda, Linda.
He poured himself a breakfast mug full of neat vodka and had just taken a sip when Pat entered the room.
I see, Carter. Boozing at this time of the morning, eh?
That's right.
That's all you do these days, Carter. Booze, booze and more booze.
Is that so?
Yes, it is. I think it's disgusting. This drink in the cocktail cabinet isn't for drinking willy-nilly, you know.
No? What is it for, then?
It's for entertainment.
entertaining socially. It's for when people come round and you say, would you care for a cocktail? And when they say they would, you say, good, what's your poison then? Vodka and tonic, or would you prefer a glass of cream soda? That's what the drinks are for, Carter.
I see. Just so long as I know, eh?
I heard the news about Linda Preston.
Did you?
Isn't it tragic when something like that happens, Carter?
Hmm.
Hmm. Is that all you can say? Hmm. Haven't you got no feelings? Haven't you got no compassion for your fellow human beings?
Hmm.
Oh, Carter, no wonder we're in such a mess. No wonder we're so distant with each other.
Hmm.
He drained his mug of vodka and poured himself another.
I had such plans for us when we first got married. I wanted you to be a young executive with your own briefcase. I wanted us to take annual holidays each year on the continent. I wanted us to have our own individual credit card holders and drink wine in the evening from our very own do-it-yourself wine rack. And look at us now. Just look at the state of us. You've got rid of the car, you work in a factory with dirty fingernails, you never ever go to the dentist to get your teeth scaled. All you do is booze and watch the sport on the telly. Well, what about me, Carter? What about my life? What about Nigel? Why can't you show an interest in him?
I do.
All right, then tell me this. How old is he?
3.
You see, he's 5. Your son and heir is 5 years of age and you don't know it.
She let out a low wail of misery and fled from the room. Carter Brandon finished off the bottle of vodka and said,
oh, Linda.
That night, Carter Brandon went to the allotment to visit his father and Uncle Mort. They sat in the old brake wagon of the Lancashire and Yorkshire Railway and drank flagons of pale ale and miniatures of brandy.
What sort of a day have you had?
Not bad. And yourself?
Not bad.
They played dominoes. Dusk clambered over the distant moorlands and crags and rolled down the valley to cover the city in its sullen, sooty palms. Mr. Brandon laid down his 6 domino with a smirk, and then he said,
oh, I've just remembered.
What?
I've been made redundant.
Why?
Why what?
Why have you been made redundant?
Simple, they're closing down the stuff warehouse at the end of the month.
Why?
Oh, Stroth, Carter, you're worse than your mother, you, with all these questions.
No, he's not. That's impossible. You should have seen her, Carter, when your dad told her the news. She made a right meal out of it. Tears, tantrums, slamming doors, switching the hot water tap on and off, rooting through her Royal Library insurance policies, the whole bloody works.
Typical of women, is that? Any excuse and off they go, showing their emotions in public.
They played 2 more hands of dominoes and started on the miniatures of rum. And then Uncle Mort said,
you know those canaries of mine?
Warblers. Get it right, warblers.
All right, warblers. Well, they've had another egg.
Really? Honestly? They've had another egg?
That's right, Carter. Life's just one long round of unbridled excitement, isn't it?
That night it thundered. The lightning flashed. Sulphur flickered on tongues and eyelids. Carter Brandon tossed and turned. He could not sleep. He got out of bed and went downstairs to the lounge diner. He poured himself a large measure of rum and drank it with a can of ice-cold lager. And the little voice from deep inside him said,
you fool, Carter. You mug. You're going to kill yourself going on like this.
Get lost, Daniel. Shove off.
He was still drinking when his mother came round at 10:30 in the morning.
I've come to see how you're managing.
All right.
All right. Just look at state of you. Boozing at home at this time of morning and still in your pyjama trousers. Oh, what's got into you, Carter? You've changed so much from what you used to be. You was lovely when you was a little boy during the last war with your leather leggings and your Mickey Mouse gas mask. You took your halibut oil capsules and your viral and your Gregory powder without a murmur. You've grown hard, Carter. You've got hard lines on the corners of your mouth. You've got hard look in your eyes. All you think about these days is self, self, self.
Is that so?
Yes, it is. Oh, Carter, be my little boy again. Come home with me now and have supper with your dad and your Uncle Mort and we'll play Chase the Ace at Newmarket and I'll tuck you up in bed and you can read your Biggles books with the light on. Oh, come on, Carter. Come home with me, lad.
I can't. I promised Sid Skellhorn to mend his rabbit hutch.
But his assignation was not with Sid Skellhorn. It was with Dorothy Fernley from Complaints.
Shall we go and visit Linda Preston in hospital?
No.
Well, what shall we do then? I've bought this frock special from Francine's Fashions. 7 guineas reduced her into Dauphin.
I can see that.
Shall we go to the pictures, or would you prefer an Indian meal? If we can find somewhere clean.
Let's go for a pint.
He took her to the upstairs bar of Topley's Wine Lodge and ordered a large schooner of Madeira for himself and a small sweet sherry for her.
I like being with you, Carter.
Oh,
I've always fancied you something rotten.
Hmm.
I think I'm in love with you.
You what?
I'm always falling in love, me. I think it must be something to do with me hormones. I might have far too many, you see. Carter.
Aye, aye, Carter. Aye, I'm your Wingsy Bash. You've got the right one here, eh?
Shut up, Daniel. Push off. Shall we have another drink, then?
Certainly not. You've already had two. That's more than enough for one night's drinking, is that? You can take me back to your house.
My house? You can't go there.
Oh, can't I? Just you wait and see, my lad.
She took him firmly by the hand, hauled him to his feet and led him to the door. He passed by Pat's best friend, Hazel Huskisson, as was, and her husband, Ken Barmer.
Well, well, Carter. And how are things going with you?
Not bad.
So I see. So I see, Carter.
Dorothy Fernley escorted him firmly to his house and closed the front door behind her solidly and said,
I'll just go upstairs and inspect your bedroom. I'll call you when I'm ready.
Righto.
I hope you know what you're doing, Carter.
Doing, Daniel? I'm not doing no.
Fool the other one, Carter. Don't make me laugh, kid. Yuck, yuck, yuck.
Carter Brandon drank a swift whiskey from the neck of the bottle, and then he was summoned upstairs to his bedroom. He found Dorothy Fernley lying naked on the bed.
Right then, Carter. Let's get cracking, shall we?
Righto.
They got cracking. When they'd finished, Dorothy Fernley said,
Well, it wasn't bad, I suppose, but I think I put my back out on your headboard. You want to complain to the makers.
She left. Carter Brandon went downstairs and finished off the bottle of whiskey. Then he started on a bottle of Bacardi.
Screw, Carter. You're not off knocking it back, mate.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are. You're drinking it like it's going out of fashion. What's wrong with you?
Nothing. There's nothing wrong with me, mate. There's... Oh, Linda. 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 Linda.
Linda Preston left the hospital on a day of surly wind and lilting cherry blossom. She took up residence in the Masonette, which had been bequeathed to her by Count Jugular, together with his Norwich canaries and his pedigree white mice. Carter Brandon hired a Ford Transit van and helped her with the move.
Listen, let's crack this bottle of champagne, shall we?
Champagne?
I saved it from wedding. Count Jugular and me were going to drink it with candles and soft music on our first anniversary.
Oh, aye.
There's no need to look so tragic, kid. You are the only bloke in the whole wide world I'd want to share this bottle of bubbly with now.
Ta.
Well, go on, then. Don't stand there looking all gormless. Open the bottle.
Right.
Poor old Count Jugular. He furnished this house all on his own, you know.
Hmm.
Ah, we were going to be so happy here. We'd got it all worked out, you know. We was going to have a couple of sprogs, and in the evening, when he went out wrestling, we was going to read books and drink red wine and listen to classical music and... Hey, Carter, you've knocked that back quick, haven't you?
What?
The champagne. You've swigged it in a single gulp.
Hmm.
What's wrong with you, kid? Boozing? Birding?
Birding?
Dorothy Fernley. Old beaky nose with a flat chest. She come round visiting last night and told me all about it. She couldn't stop smirking and flashing her knickers.
Hmm.
What's wrong with you, Carter? What's to do?
Never mind me. What about you? What are you going to do with yourself now?
Simple, kid. I am going to lead the life Count Jugular always wanted me to lead. I'm going to turn myself into a starchy-nosed housewife with a well-laundered mind and a right pretty bummed outlook on life. In other words, Carter, just like your Pat.
But Pat was not pretty bummed when she came round to the house at the weekend. She was livid.
You've been out with other women in public, Carter. Don't deny it. I know you have. I don't mind you doing it in private. But when you're spotted by Hazel Huskisson in a public place and she comes to me gloating about it, I draw the line. You should have seen the way she looked. She was so smug. She was so cocky. I could have scratched her eyes out. She's always wanted to get one over on me as Hazel Huskisson. She makes me sick with that mobile caravanette and that husband of hers with his white-collar job and the index-linked pension when he retires.
Give over, will you?
No, I will not give over. And while I'm about it, what's this?
A pillowcase.
I'm perfectly well aware it's a pillowcase, Carter. The point is, it's off our bed, and it's covered in lipstick.
Hmm.
Oh, I think it's disgusting. A married man bringing loose women back to his home and sleeping with them in his own wife's bed.
But you're not living here, for Pete's sake. You walked out on me. You got yourself another man. You told me in your letters. And don't kid me, you've not been getting your bit of nookie on the side with him.
Oh, you vulgar thing, Carter. I hate you. Hate you. I hate you.
Do you want a glass of vodka or something?
No, I do not, and neither should you at this time of the morning.
Oh, Carter, I don't mind you not being a white-collar worker. I don't mind you not owning a mobile caravanette and an index-linked pension. I don't. Honest. I don't even mind the way you never use a pickle fork proper. All I want is you, as you are, Carter. I love you, and I want to come home to you. Carter? Carter, I've poured my heart out to you, love, so what have you got to say?
You could always have a glass of shandy if you wanted.
Oh, Carter, Carter, you're hopeless. You're utterly hopeless.
Nothing much happened for the next few weeks. There was an earthquake in Peru, a ferryboat capsized in the Far East. There was pestilence in India, and the price of sprouts soared in the covered market. Carter Brandon went to Dorothy Fernley's house to take her to the works social. She said,
"Come on in, Carter. My mum and dad are in Bridlington again, and I'm not wearing nothing under my dressing gown neither. Do you want to have a look?"
"Aye, all right."
"There. There you are, Carter."
"Hmm. Ta very much. I like your vest."
There were floods in Bangladesh. There was a plane crash in Ecuador. A bus fell into a ravine in Mexico, and Carter Brandon received another letter from Pat. It informed him that circumstances had changed since their last meeting, when she'd intimated that she wished to return home to him. She had, by chance, bumped into Mr. Macclesfield, to whom, in her working days, she'd once been personal assistant. It continued thus.
"I have now taken up residence with Mr. Macclesfield in his residence, with sliding doors throughout and an ensuite bathroom in Horatio Nelson Blue in the master bedroom. And it is just the ticket. I never want to see you again. If you wish to see your son, Nigel, you can make arrangements through a third party, who on no account should be yourself. I remain yours faithfully, your wife, Pat, Mrs. Brandon."
The spring dragged its way towards summer. There was famine in Africa, war in Asia, and a member of the royal family went down with influenza. Carter Brandon consulted one of his bird books and discovered that the warblers nesting on his Uncle Mort's allotment were extremely rare.
"They're called mourning warblers."
"Well, I'm not surprised they're in mourning, living round here."
"You don't understand. They don't belong in these parts. The real home is in America."
"Well, that's typical of Yankees, that. First they send us their soldiers during the war, and now they're sending us their bloody canaries."
"Warblers, get it right, warblers."
In the third week of April, two events of moment occurred. First, the mourning warblers lost their eggs.
"I reckon it's Teddy Ward's tomcat what's done it. Well, it's a well-known law of nature that tomcats like canaries' eggs, isn't it?"
"Warblers! Warblers!"
The second event of note was the visit of Hazel Huskisson, as was, to Carter Brandon's house. She leaned back in the low-slung imitation leather sofa, stroked the thighs of her long, slim legs, and said,
"I'm an emissary, Carter."
"Oh, aye. Who from?"
"Pat."
"I see. Do you want a gin and tonic?"
"No, thank you. And neither should you at this time of the morning."
"I'm not, love. I'm drinking Bacardi and Coke."
"Oh, do you know, Carter, I feel really sorry for you."
"Oh, aye.
When I think of how happy me and Ken are together, I could weep for you and Pat."
"Thou very much."
"He's been a lovely husband to me, is Ken. Never been a moment's bother. I know he can't give me a baby owing to his sperm count, but that doesn't stop him from trying, you know."
"Good."
"We're the only couple in the cul-de-sac with a mobile caravanette."
"Great."
"Look, Carter, all I've come round to say is this. I've talked to Pat, and she's very happy with Mr. Macclesfield, and she sent me to tell you she's adamant about leaving you. And will you remember to cancel the Daily Mail?"
"Certainly. And I'll cancel Pins and Needles, too."
"I'll be going then. Listen, Carter, if ever you want to come round and discuss things with me when Ken's away on business, you know you'll be very welcome, don't you?"
"Ta, I'll bear that in mind."
"I bet you will, Carter. Course, he's a right cracker, is that one?"
"Give over, Daniel."
"No, I'm serious, mate. It's in a different league to old beaky nose with a flat chest is Hazel Huskisson. It's got style. Not like Linda Preston."
"Lay off, Daniel. Leave Linda out of it."
April slouched to a close with a sigh of snowflakes and a weary whisper of frost. Carter Brandon met his mother and father by chance in the new shopping piazza on Halifax Road. Mr. Brandon was wearing his best suit and his shoes were shining. He was scowling. Mrs. Brandon took them to the new gondola coffee bar. The tables were made of smoked glass and chrome, and in the centre of the room was a papier-mâché tiger with green and red eyes, which flashed on and off.
"I don't suppose there's any chance of getting a pint here, is there?"
"No, there is not. I don't know how you've got the cheek to ask after all the humiliations you heaped on me just now.
What humiliations?
I took him in person to apply for a job, Carter. It was ideal for him. It was perfect.
What was it?
Secretary of the Badminton Club.
Dear God.
Yes, Leslie Brandon, you might well shake your head and blaspheme after what you've done to me. Tell him. Tell Carter what happened.
It were nothing much. They dragged me up in front of the committee and they asked me what plans I had for the future of the club. So I told them I'd burn it down because it was a right bloody eyesore and had no time for shuttlecocks. I mean, that's all that happened. I don't know why she's taking the ump.
Is it any wonder that I'm going under, Carter? Is it any wonder that I feel like throwing in the towel and running away from it all?
Hmm.
May came bounding in with gales from the north. Herons deserted their nests. The city weirs roared and rumbled and frothed. Carter Brandon sat with his father in Uncle Mort's shed on the allotment, drinking whiskey and bottles of glucose stout.
Your mother's been talking about running away from home.
Oh, I?
You know, Carter, when I were young and in my prime, I often used to wonder what it'd be like if I had the great good fortune for your mother to run away from home.
Did you? And what were your conclusions?
I can't remember, lad. Well, I got a lot on my plate at the time, what with trying to conceive you and running in a new snooker queue.
And then Uncle Mort burst into the shed.
Hey, up. My canaries have started laying eggs again.
Warblers, warblers.
All right, then, warblers. Don't be so bloody finicky. All I'm trying to say is that they've laid two eggs again.
Roundy little devils.
Aye. You know, it's a big responsibility to me, is this, Les? I wonder if they'll be born normal.
Two more eggs were deposited in the nest on successive days. And then, on an evening of muted thunder and sodden swallows, Mrs. Brandon visited Carter Brandon's home once more.
Oh, Carter, I'm so unhappy. I'm so miserable.
Hmm.
Life can be very cruel for people like us, Carter.
Hmm.
You scrimp and scrape when you're young and newly married. You make sacrifices, like kissing your husband when he's full of ale from pub and helping him off with his pyjama trousers on Saturday nights. And then just as you reach that happy time in life when you can start looking at single beds in the co-op furnishing department, he's thrown out of work. And all your plans are getting a dry cleaner agency with living accommodation to rear, and your own personally printed carrier bags are dashed and crumpled into dust.
Mm.
Oh, come back to the family, Carter. Come back home and be my little boy again. I need someone to love, lad. I need someone to care for and lavish affection on. And your dad won't let me have another dog in case it eats his gardening manuals.
Mm.
And I haven't got a clue what it's like being a woman, Carter. Well, most of them haven't got right built for breastfeeding, have they?
Hmm?
Men should never get married, Carter. They should stop at home with their mothers and practice artificial insemination.
Hmm.
Take my advice, Carter. Come back home to your mother. Forget all about Pat. Forget all those girls you're taking out with them nipple things I got these days. Forget all about women totally, Carter. Promise me you'll do that, Carter. Promise me faithful.
Aye, righto.
That night, Hazel Huskisson caught him in the back room of the Tinker's Bucket with Sandra Bullions. They were holding hands, and Sandra Bullions was saying,
I've always fancied you, Carter. Have you always fancied me? If you haven't, I could lose weight. I could get an ointment for my spots what smells nicer than this one.
On Friday night, he was in the Asherton Arms next to the garden centre with Sharon Boot, and he looked up and saw Hazel Huskisson. She was standing at the bar with her husband, Ken Barmer. He caught her eyes, and she smiled. It was a long, knowing smile. It bored into him as later that night Sharon Boot bucked and bounced beneath him and groaned. It bored into him when he'd staggered home, his belly awash with whiskey, his head slopping and slurring with beer.
So what's your game, Carter?
What do you mean?
All these birds you're knocking off right, left and centre. What does it all mean?
It means I'm having a good time. It means I'm having a fling. It means I'm making the most of things while I'm still young.
Rubbish.
It's not rubbish, Daniel. It's not. You think of all the middle-aged blokes you know who spend all their time grumbling and grousing about the chances they turned down when they was young and they were frightened of being caught by the missies. There's hundreds of them, mate. Thousands. You can hear them every day in the pubs, eyeing up the crumpet, all darty-eyed and droopy-mouthed, all ground down and riddled with regrets. Well, not me, Daniel. I'm taking my chances while they come.
Rubbish.
It's not.
It is. Birding, boozing. That life's not for you, Carter. You're not suited to it. Give it up, mate. Go back to what you used to be. All gormless and daft and helpless. All forlorn. Go back to your mum and let her spoil you and pamper you. Get yourself back with Pat and her doilies and her paper tissues and her dainty teacup tits. Give up the scrubbers, Carter. Dear God, you don't even know one from the other. They're all the same to you.
They're not.
All right then, Clever Dick. Who's the one with the big ears and the moles on her thighs?
Sharon Boot.
rubbish. That's Sandra Bullion's.
Aye, well,
And who's the bird with the jet black hair and the bitten fingernails? Anita Batley, Pinnock! Anita Batley!
Oh, struth, Daniel, what's happening to me? What's going on? Oh, Linda. Linda.
That night he tossed and turned in his bed. Perspiration poured down his chest. His heart pumped wildly, and then it paused and fluttered. He groaned.
Oh, hell. Oh, struth. I'm dying.
Next morning he drank 3 glasses of bicarbonate of soda, chewed 1/2 packet of strong white mince, and lurched to Topley's Wine Lodge for a midday hair of the dog. He found Linda Preston sitting on a high stool in the downstairs bar. At her feet was a green canvas bag bulging with shopping.
Quite the domesticated little housewife, aren't you, Carter?
Mm.
Oh, you're a right bundle of fun this morning, aren't you? What's up? Life getting you down, is it?
Maybe.
Seen old Beaky Nose Fernie lately?
No, I've booted her into touch.
Oh, aye. And what about Ailey Myerscough with her warts? And Ledley Pinchin?
Them too, the whole lot of them. I've given them all up, Linda. I've seen the light. No more crumpet for me ever again.
Are you sure, Carter?
Positive.
Then you're just like me with fellas, aren't you, kid?
Hmm.
I always said we was 2 of a kind, Carter.
Hmm. Listen, I was thinking, why don't we get a couple of bottles of wine and a carry out a lager and go back to your place?
No, Carter, no chance, no way. I'm a reformed character, kid. All chaste, all respectable, all celibate. Just like you, eh?
Aye, well.
The days passed by. Mute swans were strangled on anglers' lines. Moorhen chicks were killed by pike. There was a shortage of radishes. And then on a Sunday evening of hollow chests and muted laughter, Carter Brandon and Sid Skellon went to meet Uncle Mort and Mr. Brandon in the back room of the Whippet public house.
You know something, lads? I'm getting right worried about my canaries.
Warblers, for Pete's sake, warblers!
All right, then, warblers.
What's to do with them, then?
Well, I'm worried someone's going to pinch their eggs.
Why? Hey, are they free range or something?
Oh, don't be a prat all your life, Skellon.
Oh.
Them canary... warblers of mine are very rare. And that being the case, you'll get these here nest robbers wanting to nick their eggs.
Don't talk empty.
I'm not talking empty. I'm not, am I, Carter?
No, you're not. There's collectors who'll give hundreds of quid to get their hands on them eggs.
Hundreds of quid, honest?
Certainly. I keep telling you, they're very rare, them birds. They've never ever bred in this country before. They're absolutely unique.
All right. There's no need to get so enthusiastic about it. Poor little devils. I were growing quite attached to them. I mean, they fly thousands and thousands of miles across the oceans and the mountains. And then of all the places they could choose to lay their eggs, they pick on my shed.
Bloody fools.
No, Wes, no. It's right touching, is that? They put their total trust in me.
Well, in that case, they're even bigger fools than I thought they was.
Yeah, maybe. But something's got to be done to protect them.
Who?
Me canaries, Pillock.
Oh, warblers. How many more times have... Got it?
What?
We'll guard them. We'll keep watch on them during the night in the shed. We'll organise a rota and take it in turns to look after them till the eggs hatch out.
You know, Carter, that's not a bad idea.
It's a pearl of an idea. Oh, communing with Mother Nature, protecting her innocent victims, the strong helping the weak. It's the perfect excuse to stop out all night boozing.
Hey, can I come too? Telly's broke down, you see, and I don't fancy staying at wife all night over an empty grate.
Of course you can, Sid, of course you can.
Oh.
Tell you what, we'll start tonight, the 4 of us. Right then, lads. Pints and whiskey chases all round. Let battle commence.
And so that night, the 4 men established themselves in the shed on Uncle Mort's allotment. Carter Brandon arrived with a plastic bag containing 2 bottles of whiskey and 8 cans of lager. Sid Skellon brought a bottle of rum. Uncle Mort and Mr. Brandon provided 6 flagons of pale ale and 2.5 bottles of Cyprus sherry.
Well, that should keep us going for a bit, eh, lads?
Ah, too. Shall I be mother?
He took out his dentures, wiped them on the lining of his cap, replaced them in his mouth and commenced to pour out the pale ale. Uncle Mort passed round the bottle of rum and they drank in turns from the neck. The rain lashed down. The wind roared. Carter Brandon peered through the windows.
Them poor warblers. Who'd be out on a night like this?
Never mind them. Who'd be us on a night like this?
How do you mean, Ferryface?
Well, you think about it. I mean, it's quarter before midnight. Well, what will they be doing in London now, eh? I'll tell you. They'll be twisting away in them discos with flashing lights and no braziers. They'll be bedding down in warm bedrooms with dolly birds with long legs and enormous doodahs. They'll be going at it like rabbits, unrestrained, rampant, plunging...
Hold on. You'll give yourself a seizure going on like that.
Yeah, the swinging 60s don't make me laugh. They've passed us by here. I mean, where's all the miniskirts, eh? Where's all the topless nudity in public, eh? Where's all the promiscuity? I've not seen no promiscuity in our house, and I've kept my eyes open too, I tell you.
They finished the bottle of rum. They finished the pale ale and the cans of lager. They started on the first bottle of whisky.
It's all this obsession with youth and the young what's to blame. In my day, there was no such thing as youth. This city was populated entirely by old people. The tram conductors was all old people, so the rent collectors, and the football managers, and the blokes what came round to sharpen your scissors. Good God, even the babies was born older than what they are nowadays.
You're right there, Mort.
Babies. Bloody awful things they are. I reckon the authorities have got it all wrong. In my opinion, a married couple shouldn't have a baby until they're at least 85 years of age.
Why?
Because they'd be bound to snuff it shortly after, and some other silly devils that have the responsibility of bringing it up.
That's philosophy, is that, Mort?
Is it? Well, you live and learn, don't you?
The minutes ticked by. Sid Skellon's head lolled forwards onto his chest, and soon he was snoring steadily. Carter Brandon looked through the window. The rain had stopped, but dark clouds were blustering the sickly face of the moon, and the dark masses of beech and chestnut tottered and lurched. When Carter Brandon turned round, he saw that his father and Uncle Mort were fast asleep. He opened the last bottle of sherry. The room swirled and swayed. He furrowed his eyes and squinted. In a dark corner among the buckled plastic seed trays and the mounds of musty sacking, he saw the figure of a woman. Blonde hair, thorn-sharp breasts, pursed lips, sway of hips, mocking eyes. She held out her arms to him.
Oh, Linda. Linda, Linda, Linda.
The men woke early next morning, stiff and cold, shivering with damp and drink. They stamped their feet, they blew on their fists and flapped their arms.
Well, that's what I call a damn good night out.
A pearl, Mort, a positive Brahma. Come on then, Carter, let's get back up to the house. Your mother should be halfway through cooking breakfast by now.
They stepped outside. They breathed in deeply at the fresh morning air. They coughed hoarsely. And then as one, they recoiled with horror.
My God! Oh, my God!
There on the veranda was a small mount of broken shells and oozing yolk.
The eggs!
Smashed to smithereens!
Every single one of them!
But who's done it? Who the hell managed to do it when we was on guard specific all through the night?
They did not have long to find out. Heavy of heart, they plodded back to the house. They went into the kitchen, slumped into the hard-backed chairs and poured themselves bottles of glucose stout. Mrs. Brandon was at the sink, peeling potatoes and singing to herself. They told her the grave news. She laughed. They inquired as to the nature of her mirth. She said,
"It was me. I'm the one that smashed your eggs."
"Why? For Pete's sake, woman, why?"
"For this reason, to get you back to your senses. Grown men spending all your time boozing, skulking around like toy soldiers, whispering and plotting and giggling and laughing. And for what? All for the sake of Fork and Airy's eggs. It makes me sick. It makes me livid."
"It doesn't make sense, Annie. There's no rhyme or reason to it."
"Oh, no? And is there rhyme or reason to you sitting on your backside all day doing nought? What about spending your time looking for work? That's never occurred to you, has it? Well, what about me? Has no one thought of me? How am I going to manage? What happens when our savings run out? Has anyone thought of that?"
"But why break the eggs? It's wanton, is that? Why did you have to go and smash them?"
"To give some attention to me. That's all I want. Attention and consideration. Love and sympathy. I want to be treated like a woman. And if I'm not, I warn you here and now, I shall go upstairs, pack my belongings and leave here for good and all. And now then, what have you got to say to that?"
"Plenty. Who's going to mend the fuses when you've gone?"
When Carter Brandon returned home, he found a letter from Pat propped against the blue glass Bambi on the mantelpiece. He opened a can of lager and commenced to read.
"Dear Carter, this is to tell you that I do not miss you at all with your thoughtlessness and always leaving your underpants and vests in a pile at the side of the bed. Mr. Macclesfield makes me very happy, even though he is always away on business. But I must say he always brings me back souvenirs such as miniature pottery clogs in Dutch, and he never forgets Nigel, unlike some I could mention. Life for me on the Prestige Development, where we now live, is never dull, even though the lady next door on the right with the Yappy Shetland sheepdogs is always popping in for coffee and complaining about her husband, who, apparently, is carrying on with the manageress of an office equipment shop. I hope you're not carrying on. Hazel Huskisson says you are not. Not that I care, being as how I'm so happy, and so is Nigel, who keeps asking for Mr. Macclesfield when he is away, which is unfortunately quite often owing to his job. I never ever want to see you again. Although, if I do, will you promise to clean your thumbnails? Yours faithfully, your wife, Pat. Mrs. Brandon.
Nothing much happened of note during the next week. On Monday evening it rained, and Hazel Huskisson came to visit. She took him upstairs to bed and made love to him.
Now, that was nice, wasn't it, Carter? That was lovely.
Aye. Ta very much.
On Tuesday, he found a dead woodmouse on the front drive. On Wednesday, he learned that Wagstaff and Brooms was to close and he was to be made redundant from that moment.
That's a bit of a devil, eh, Carter?
Aye, it is, Daniel. I'd best go and have a pint or two to drown me sorrows.
On Thursday, a small tortoise lumbered across his lawn. He went to visit Linda Preston, but she was not in.
Bit of a devil, that, eh, Carter?
Aye, I'd best go and have a pint or two to drown me sorrows.
On Friday morning, Uncle Mort told him that the morning warblers had left the allotment.
I'm not surprised, really, Carter. Well, there's not much for them to do round here, is there?
No.
I mean, what prospects did they have? What future was there for their offsprings? Same as for everyone else round here, Carter. Note.
Aye.
Pity, really. I'd grown quite fond of them, even though they wasn't proper canaries.
On Saturday morning, he bumped into Pat in the city centre. She suggested he should accompany her for lunch to the lounge bar of the Grand Eastern Hotel. She ordered chicken in the basket with brown bread and butter. He ordered a plate of chips.
I've had ever such good reports about you from Hazel Huskisson.
Oh, aye?
Yes. She says she came round to visit you and you had ever such an interesting conversation.
Did she?
Yes. She says you're behaving yourself impeccable. And in addition, you've virtually cut out boozing. Entirely.
Hmm.
I quite like her, really. I know she can be a bit hoity-toity at times and make a bit of a meal about the material things of life and... Carter?
Yes?
Do you think things would have worked out different in our relationship if we'd had a mobile caravanette instead of Nigel?
Search me.
Carter?
Yes?
Mr. Macclesfield's away on business again. He's in Bulgaria. That's abroad.
I know.
Carter?
Yes?
Do you like us meeting like this?
Not bad.
Oh, Mr. Macclesfield would do his nut if he found out.
Mm.
He's very jealous, you see. He's very possessive. He can't abide other men looking at me. He grinds his teeth and... Carter?
Yes?
What are you doing on Sunday? I'll tell you why. Mr. Macclesfield will still be away, you see, and if you like, we could borrow his new Citroen estate and go out for the day, and you can drive if you like, and I'll leave Nigel with Mother so we can be alone together. And Carter?
Yes?
Would you like to go out with me for the day on Sunday?
Ah, go on then.
Oh, great. I'll pick you up at the house at 9:30 sharp. And will you wear that new sweater my mother bought you from Atkinson Sivrites for Christmas? I know the memories might be painful to you, but...
Sunday, 9:30 sharp. See you.
That evening he drank alone in Topley's Wine Lodge. He drank steadily, and when time was called, he took a taxi to Linda Preston's maisonette and hammered on her front door. She opened the window and called down...
Go away, Carter, go away! You're drunk! Go back home and be a good lad like you was always cut out to be.
Oh, Linda, 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 Linda.
Pat called for him at 9:30 sharp next morning. She was wearing a cream linen suit and a navy blue high-collared silk blouse with matching shoes.
I put this on special. It always was your favourite rig out, wasn't it?
Mm.
He slipped into the driving seat of the battleship Grey Citroen estate and they drove off.
Where are we going, Carter?
Wait and see.
They drove through a countryside of long, straight, lazy rivers. There were gentle, red-bricked villages. They passed through a placid, contented town with flour mills, a solemn abbey, and Dutch and Danish coasters nestling at its quays.
Do you fancy stopping off for a pint or two?
No, thank you, Carter. I think you've been doing far too much of that lately, don't you?
Hmm.
They drove on. Presently, they reached Flamborough Head. There was no mist, there was no chill, it was sunny.
Not bad, eh?
Smashing.
A pleasure boat chugged into view off the north landing. It had a stiff-raked funnel and a canopy over the stern flapping in the breeze.
Well, Carter, I know you're dying to ask me. Go ahead, then.
Aye. Well,
Well...
Well, what?
Well, have you and Mr. Macclesfield ever... You know... Well, have you?
No. But he wants me to, Carter. He's always pestering me when he takes his pyjamas off. He says it's driving him mad. He says it's... But I haven't, Carter, not once.
They had afternoon tea, and then Carter Brandon drove Pat home to the Prestige development where she lived with Mr. Macclesfield.
That was a lovely day out, Carter. Thank you.
You're welcome.
We must do this again sometime.
Aye, what about tomorrow?
Oh, I'd love to, Carter, but you see, the thing is, Mr. Macclesfield's coming back tomorrow.
See you then, ta-ra.
Oh, see you, Carter, see you, love. It was a lovely day out, right smashing.
Carter Brandon walked slowly away through the flimsy dusk. A tawny owl hooted.
Not a bad day out, eh, Carter?
Not bad, Daniel. Not bad at all, me old wingsy bash.
With a smile on his face and a spring to his step, he wheeled up the front path of his parents' house, flung open the front door and went straight into the back parlour. His father and Uncle Mort faced him glumly.
Hey, up then. What interesting happened since I've been away?
Yes, one of the knobs fell off the wireless.
I see. What else?
Yes. Them canaries of mine have come back to the allotment.
Warblers, warblers, warblers.
All right, warblers.
What else?
Yes.
What?
It's your mother. She upped and off this morning while me was out at the pub.
Where's she gone to?
Well, how should I know? Do you fancy a bottle of beer?
Ta.
He drank three bottles of beer and a large whiskey. When he returned home and went upstairs, he found a figure lying in his bed. He pulled back the sheets gently. The figure stirred. She opened up her arms to him.
You? It's you?
That's right, Carter. It's me.
So what are you doing here?
I've run away from your father.
I know, but why come here?
There's nowhere else to go. Oh, Carter, I'm so lonely. I'm so miserable. Oh, Carter, is that all you can say? Can't you offer me no words of comfort? Can't you cuddle me and console me? Did you know that when soldiers are mortally wounded in war, they always cry out for the mother? Well, I'm mortally wounded now, Carter, and I'm crying out for my son. Oh, Carter, I've been threatening to run away for ages. But when the time came and I had to carry it out, I didn't want to go. I looked at your father with his fat boozer's belly and his greasy hair with all them spikes sticking up on crown, and I thought, it's just like having a smelly old dog. You've grown used to it. And you think to yourself, I can't get it put down now. It's not fair. Let it run its natural course. If only he'd get himself a job, Carter. That's all I want. If he had a job, I'd go back like a shot. You going to tell your father where I am?
I don't know.
Well, lad, it's up to you. It's your decision.
2 weeks passed. Nothing much happened. There was a small fire in Burton-on-Trent. They caught a spy in Australia. A Russian made an important scientific discovery. And on Saturday morning, Carter Brandon took his bicycle and rode over to his father's house.
Hey, up then. How are you managing without me mother?
Champion, I've got myself a new job.
A job? Where?
At the garden centre. I'm helping this bloke propagate his perennials. I did a delphinium last week. I feel right proud of myself.
It's all right for him, gloating. What about me, eh? I've not had a decent meal since your mother left. All I've had is sardines and arrowroot biscuits. My canaries are feeding better than what I am.
Warblers, warblers.
I wonder where your mother is, Carter. She'll likely be sunning herself in the tropics. She'll be leading the life of Riley, painting her toenails and wearing miniskirts and waggling her backside in time to the swinging bloody 60s.
I know where she is.
Pardon?
She's staying with me.
What?
She's in my house. She made me fried bacon and potato cakes for breakfast this morning.
Well, she can bloody well stop there, then. She can.
Don't pay him no heed, Carter. You see, lad, when husband and wife reach a certain age, they merge into each other. They talk like each other, they look like each other, they smell like each other, just like a master and his dog. When one of them goes, the other one falls to pieces. Think of yourself and Pat.
Maybe, but what do I do about it?
How do you mean?
Well, my mother says she'll come back if he gets himself a job. Well, he has done. So shall I tell her or shan't I?
Hey, don't ask me, lad. That's your decision, isn't it?
Yuck, 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 eh, Carter? Yuck, yuck.
Decisions, Daniel, decisions. That's all you get in life. Decisions from morning, noon till night.
I know, Carter. You'd be better off being a dead baby like me. You see life in its proper perspective when you're dead, you know.
Aye. I think you may well be right, Daniel.
And so he hit the bottle once more. He drank secretly at nights in bed. His mother did not know. His heart thumped. His limbs ached. He had pains behind his eyes.
Help me, Daniel. Help me.
Bugger off, Carter. Help yourself.
One evening, he and his mother took a single-decker bus to a draughty pub in the Dales. The wooden floor was frayed with the studs from hikers' boots.
In the old days, we often used to come out to country pubs, your dad and me.
Mm.
We used to come on our bikes, and your dad was just as thoughtless and selfish as he is now. He never said much when we sat in pub. He used to play with his tyre levers, mostly. But he did it nicely, and you couldn't take offence. That's what men and women were like in them innocent days, Carter.
Mm.
I've got a confession to make, Carter.
What?
I want to go back home to your dad. I've made such a mistake running away. When you saw your dad, Carter, did you tell him where I was?
No.
I knew you wouldn't. You're still loyal to your own mum, aren't you, Carter?
Mm.
If only he'd get himself a job. Do you think he ever will? Do you think he's trying?
I don't know. He didn't say.
Learn your lesson from me, Carter. Get yourself back to Pat as quick as you can.
But I thought you didn't like Pat.
No, Carter, no. I misunderstood her. It's only when I ran away from your dad that I cottoned onto what she was about. She's like me, a good, loving wife frustrated by an uncaring pig of a husband. But that's what marriage is all about, Carter. Two totally incompatible people trying to make the best of things. It's incompatibility what makes the world go round, Carter.
Mm.
Take my advice, lad. Get yourself back to Pat now, this instant. It's the only way.
And at that moment, Hazel Huskisson walked into the bar. Long, lissome legs, smooth, white, arched neck, boyish breasts with no shadows. She spotted Carter Brandon immediately. She smiled. She waved.
Now there's a nice girl for you, Hazel Huskisson. Her legs are much longer than Pat's, but I don't think she's got such a childbearing pelvis, do you?
Mm.
When he went to the bar to order more drinks, Hazel Huskisson took him to one side and said softly,
"Hello, Carter. I like your new girlfriend."
"Aye, well..."
"Why haven't you called round to see me? Ken's been away this past month. I told you that night at your house when we had that lovely time together." "Was a lovely time, wasn't it, Carter?"
"Yes."
"Would you like to do it again?"
"Yes."
"Good. Ken's away again next weekend. I'll be expecting you."
That night he took a bottle of whiskey to bed with him. He drank it greedily. His legs twitched, his arms ached. The whiskey glopped out of his mouth and ran in sticky rivulets down his chest.
"I wish I were dead, Daniel."
"Why?"
"All these choices, all these decisions, all these women dragging you apart. What do I do about my mother? What do I do about Hazel Huskisson? I can't get her out of my mind. I spend all night thinking about her, night after night, and those long legs and that smooth neck and that..."
"We'll go round and see her. She's put it on a plate for you."
"Yeah, but what about Pat? What will she say?"
"What's it got to do with her? She's the one what booted you into touch, mate. Don't be a Burke all your life. Get yourself round to Hazel Huskisson. You'll never get a better chance than that. Store up some decent memories for your old age, Carter."
"I know, but what about Linda Preston?"
"What about her?"
"Well, it's just that... Oh, Linda. Linda, Linda, Linda."
He finished off the bottle of whiskey and tiptoed downstairs for a bottle of rum. Dawn came. Blackbirds sang. The sun shone. And then he shouted at the top of his voice,
"I made a decision!"
"What?"
"I'm going round to see her."
"Great, lad, great."
"I'm going right now."
"You can't. Her husband's not away till the weekend."
"I'm not going to see Hazel Huskisson. I'm going to see Linda."
"Linda?"
"Two of a kind, she said we was. She's right. Her and me. Peas in a pod, mate. Made for each other we are, Daniel. Always was, always will be."
"But you can't go in this state, Carter. You're drunk."
"I'm not."
"You are, you are."
He began to dress himself. He stumbled and fell against the wardrobe as he stood on one leg trying to put on his trousers. He giggled. He doused his face with cold water in the bathroom and slapped beneath his armpits with aftershave lotion. He went outside and mounted his bike.
"You can't ride a bike in that state, Carter. You're drunk."
"I'm not."
"You are."
"I'm not. I'm not."
He smashed his right elbow against the front gatepost as he turned out into the street. He weaved. He wobbled. He sang at the top of his voice. The sun beat down. The road bucked and bounced before him. It swayed. And then, as he reached the well-known accident black spot at Wilson's Bar... he came to his senses in the hospital. His head throbbed, his jaw ached. The whole of his right side was stiff, and there was a fetid stench in the roof of his mouth.
"Oh, Struth.
Another hangover.
A plump, ginger-haired nurse with freckles on her nose and arms smiled at him and said,
No, love, you're not hungover. You've been in a road accident. You've been unconscious for 36 hours.
Oh, Struth.
You've got a visitor. She's been waiting ever since you were brought in. Do you want to see her?
I'm not mithered either road.
Right then, I'll show her in. You can come in now, but think I warn you. He's very weak and he's not to be upset.
Well then, Carter, this is a right to do, I must say.
Mm.
You've had serious concussion of the brain and you've got contusions all over your body. Did you know that?
No, not in so many words.
You nearly killed yourself and your new suit's a complete write-off. I've no sympathy for you, Carter. None whatsoever. And will you look at me while I'm talking to you?
Right.
Your life is a complete mess, Carter. Why did you never ask me out again after our trip to Flamborough Head? I waited and I waited. What happened? Nothing. Not a dicky bird.
Mm.
The whole trouble is, you're having an affair with another woman.
Rubbish.
It is not rubbish. I've been told it's authentic.
Who by?
Hazel Huskisson. And you can't get no one more reliable than that when it comes to having all the latest in gossip about you and this other woman.
What other woman?
Linda Preston.
What?
Ah, yes, I knew that would strike home, Carter Brandon. I knew that would hurt. Well, let me tell you this. I'm not the least bit surprised. You always did have a shine for her with her common little mouth and her brassy voice and that bottom she was always waggling in public. Her, of all people. I wouldn't have minded if you'd had a fling with someone with a bit of class, like Hazel Huskisson, even though she does drive me mad with her natural long eyelashes and her 33-inch hips and her butt. Linda Preston! Linda Preston, Carter! How could you have done that to me?
Carter Brandon slept soundly that night. In the morning, he ate a hearty breakfast, and the plump nurse with ginger hair and freckles blushed when he smiled at her. His first visitor was his mother.
Well, I have not the slightest sympathy with you, Carter. I think your conduct this past few months has been disgraceful. Your wife and child have left you, and what have you done about it? Nothing, nout.
Mm.
You've not made the slightest effort to see Pat and hear her side of the story, which I'm sure is the right one. Oh, I'm not saying she's an angel. She's not. None of us is. Even the old lady in the wool shop with the fat legs. But when a man and woman fall out, there's always faults on both sides, and it's always the man what's to blame.
Mm.
Right then, so it's agreed, is it?
What?
As soon as you get out of here, first thing you do is go round to Pat, and you apologise profusely for all your errors and mistakes, even if you've not made none. And you ask her to come home with Nigel, and promise her faithful you'll get yourself a job and put a new plug on the tumble dryer. She'll come back then, Carter. She'll come back like a shot. Force to, lad, force to.
Mm.
You've brought such misery to me, Carter. You've deprived me of a grandson who was going to go to a proper grammar school with a new fountain pen and propelling pencil bought by me and his bumper in matching tortoiseshell. Do you know, I'm the only regular in the outpatients at the foot hospital who hasn't got a grandson. I feel so ashamed, so...
Mm-hmm.
And for what? Just so you can form a mucky attachment with another woman who's not worth the paper Pat's wrote on.
Other woman? What are you talking about?
Linda Preston.
Who told you that?
Hazel Huskisson. I met her yesterday in the Dinky Bakery and she... Carter? Carter, are you all right, lad?
I think you'd better go, Mrs. Brandon. He needs all the rest he can get.
Oh, yes, nurse. Right-o, nurse. Thank you very much, nurse. Well then, Carter, get well soon, love. If only you'd had a decent haircut, none of this would ever have happened.
Right then. Let's get you comfy, me lad. Has anyone ever told you what lovely brown eyes you've got? Has anyone ever told you what... And what do you want?
Has she gone?
Who?
My wife.
We almost bumped into her in the corridor. We had to hide in the ladies' bog and pretend we were anaesthetists.
Do you know these people?
Aye, it's me dad and Uncle Mort.
We've come to visit him, missus. We wouldn't do it normal, but we thought as he's in hospital, we'd make an exception.
Well, don't upset him and don't stay long.
Good God, no, love. Perish the thought. We might catch something serious off the cleaning women.
Right then, I'll leave you to it.
We've come to visit you, Carter.
So I see.
Is there out you want?
No.
All right, then, we'll be off. Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.
Oh, hey, I almost forgot.
What?
It's me canaries. They've laid these eggs. I've brought them here so they'd come to no harm.
Pardon?
Well, think about it, Carter. You're laid here in bed doing bugger all. It's a healthy, germ-free atmosphere. It's safe. It's warm. You can hatch them out for me. There you are, Luke. Hey? They fit in just perfect round your belly button, don't they?
Aye, they do and all.
Hey up, Carter, careful. You'll have them eggs scrambled laughing and shaking like that. Show a bit of responsibility, will you?
Right, I'll see you then. Thanks for the eggs. I'll look after them. You couldn't have chosen aught better to cheer me up.
Good. I tell you what, though, Carter. Do you think I'd better ask for a transfer for you?
Where to?
The maternity ward.
Once more, Carter Brandon slept soundly through the night. He did not move. The eggs remained warm and secure on his stomach. In the morning, he showed them to the ginger-haired nurse with the freckles.
Crikey! Sis will do a nut if she finds out.
In that case, we'll keep it as our secret. You and me, eh?
All right. But you'll get me shot, you will.
Hey, up, Carter. Watch it, lad. You know what nurses are like in hospital. Even the ugly ones have got wrists like Grace Kelly.
Aye, well...
He closed his eyes and began to doze. Long legs, cool blonde hair. Prissy backside, beaky nose. Ginger hair, freckles. Suddenly the door burst open and his mother charged in, dragging Mr. Brandon by the scruff of the neck.
Skulking he was, Carter. I caught him trying to skulk out of me way.
I was not.
Oh, yes, you was. You spent all your life skulking away from me.
I've not.
Yes, you have. All the time we was courting, you always looked thoroughly ashamed to be seen out with me. When we was canoodling in your mother's front parlour, and the time came for us to have a kiss, you always made an excuse and left the room.
Oh, give over.
I will not give over. You're all the same, you men. Your lives are just dedicated to one thing, skulking out of the way of your women folk.
I was not skulking out of your way. I was concealing myself in order to waylay you before you went in to see Carter, so I could put a proposition to you.
What proposition?
I want you to come back home.
What?
I want you to come back home and show me where you keep the pliers.
I see. Are you trying to tell me you love me?
Yes.
Well, say it then.
I love you.
Not like that. Say it nice. Say it proper. Throw your shoulders back and look as though you mean it.
I love you. For God's sake, I love you, woman.
Do you know, Les, that's the first time you've ever said that to me.
Well, it's never seemed appropriate before. All right, then. Are you coming home?
No, Les, no.
Why not?
I'm not coming home, Les, till you've got yourself a job.
But I have. That's what I've been trying to tell you. I've got a job in the garden centre propagating lupins. Did Carter not tell you?
No, he did not. You didn't, did you, Carter?
Ah, well,
Well, that's typical of the way you've turned out, Carter. Hard, cruel, totally self-centred. You can't have no happiness, then you'll make sure no one else has it. Oh, what a state to be in. No thought for anyone but yourself. Your mum, your dad, your wife, your son, your favourite uncle, they don't mean nothing to you. We could all disappear out of your life this instant and you'd not bat an eyelid. All you're concerned about is gratifying your own desires. Men, typical. You're all the same, a load of rubbish.
Good. Does that mean you're coming back home, then?
Yes.
They left the room hand in hand.
Well, that's put you in your place, eh, Carter?
No, it's not, Daniel. They've got it all wrong about me. Everyone's got it wrong. I'm not selfish. I'm not a boozer. I'm not a womaniser. All I want is a quiet life, mate. All I want is peace. No decisions, no hassle, no...
And then Pat came into the room. She handed him a box of fudge and said...
I've come to see you, Carter. You're looking much better. You're looking more like your old self with them dreamy brown eyes and that gormless look on your face. Well, you might as well know why I've come. I'm here to apologise about the other day.
Ta.
I shouldn't have sounded off like that. Not with you being ill and covered in contusions. It wasn't right. And seeing the look in your eyes when I let rip at you, it made my heart turn over and oh, Carter, Carter, wrap me in your arms and give me a right good kiss and a cuddle.
Hey, up steady, hon. Careful of me eggs.
Your legs? What's wrong with your legs? Oh, you've not got paralysed, have you? You're not going to be amputated.
Not me legs, it's me eggs. I'm going to have a canary.
And so the floodgates opened. That night his sleep was rent and riven by wild, flickering, forked dreams. Hazel. Hazel Huskisson. Long legs, smooth neck, boyish breasts. Linda. Linda Preston. Why hadn't she visited him?
Forget all about them, Carter. Hazel Huskisson, Linda Preston. Dreams, lad, dreams. Face the reality.
What reality?
You know, Carter, you know.
Oh, don't, Daniel.
That's the reality. She's your life, lad. Lounge diners, integral waste disposal, continental holidays abroad. That's your life, Carter. Birds, boozing. That's not for you. Swinging 60s. Get lost, Carter. You wouldn't know how to cope with it. Never mind, Face up to facts. You're drab. You're dull. You're gormless. The only life for you is a life with Pat.
Oh, Pat. Pat. Pat.
That's it, Carter. Pat. 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 It's all coming out now, lad. All the pus streaming out of the wounds. Pat, 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 come on, Carter, let it all come out.
Pat.
Right then, Carter, this is the moment. You've known what you've got to do.
Yes, Daniel. Yes, I do.
All next morning he was impatient. He snapped at the ginger-haired nurse. He did not eat his lunch. He snarled at his Uncle Mort, who visited him that afternoon to inquire about the welfare of his eggs.
Right then, Carter, if that's your attitude, I'll take them off you. You're not fit to bring up canaries' eggs, you're not. I'll take them home and hatch them under me cap myself.
Why don't you? And bloody good riddance, too.
His Uncle Mort took the eggs from his stomach, transferred them to the warm, musty space between his pate and the inside of his cap, and left. And the minutes ticked by. And so did the hours. And then Pat arrived.
Hello, Carter. Did you think I wasn't coming?
He held out his arms to her. He pulled her into his chest, and he sobbed. She held on to him tightly, and then she took a lace hanky from her sleeve and wiped his eyes.
There now, love. There. I've brought you meat and potato pie.
Ta, smashing.
Oh, go on, you book. Tell her while the moment's ripe.
Ah, well, how's Mr. Macclesfield?
Very nicely, thank you. He's in East Germany at the moment. It's behind the Iron Curtain.
I know.
Now, Carter, now. Tell her now.
I love you, Pat.
And I love you too, Carter.
I've missed you.
And I've missed you too.
Come home, and let's start all over again. I'll not go out boozing no more and playing cribbage. I'll be the perfect husband, and I'll buy an exercise bike and take up an interest in golf on the telly. Come home, Pat. And let's start everything fresh and new and lovey-dovey-like when we first got married and you'd never seen a packet of three.
Oh, Carter. Oh, Carter, love.
Don't cry, love. I know it's a shock, but the tears of happiness, you see. There's no need to be ashamed about being happy.
No, Carter, no. You've got it all wrong.
What?
I can't come back to you, Carter. I can't come back to you ever again. I love you, though. I love you heaps and heaps. I'll always love you. But I can't go back.
Why?
Because I've got a good life now, Carter. I've got a man who maintains me proper and respects me. He thinks the world of Nigel, does Mr. Macclesfield. He's putting him down for rugby. That's a public school.
I know. So's Eton.
I know. Oh, Carter, I can't throw all that to the winds. It's too late. Why couldn't you have said all that before? Why did you have to leave it till you was out of work and boozing and manking around with strange women and carrying on late at night? I'm sorry, Carter. I'm sorry, love, but it's all over.
Yes, but...
You don't understand, do you, Carter? You just don't understand. I'm going now. See you again sometime.
I do understand. I understand it all. I love you, you stupid bitch. I love you.
Next day, Carter Brandon was discharged from hospital. There was no one to greet him as he stepped outside. A cocker spaniel yapped. The wind flapped at his trousers. Slap of sunlight on blunt-eyed windows. He coughed. He hunched his shoulders. He set off for the public house on the opposite side of the road. And as he did so, Linda Preston stepped out from the old crooked-shouldered tram shelter, ran across the road, and hugged him tightly.
Oh, Linda. Bloody hell, Linda. This is the best thing that's happened to me all week.
Me too, kid. Same here.
She took him home to a maisonette. They drank mugs of strong tea. He told her about the warbler's eggs. He told her about his mother and father and their reconciliation. He told her about Hazel Huskisson. He told her about Pat.
I don't know what I'm going to do now. I feel all lost and helpless.
I know, kid. I felt exactly the same after Count Jugular went and popped his clogs. That's why I never visited you in hospital. I couldn't bear it. All them smells, all them coughs, all them cries in the night. It would have brought back memories of when I was there after the accident. I couldn't have stood it, Carter. But I came every day, you know.
Did you?
Oh, yes. I stood outside in tram shelter. I was there all through afternoon visiting hours and most of the evenings, too. I saw Pat leaving last night. She was crying her eyes out.
Crying, was she?
Something chronic, Carter. Something dreadful.
And then she took hold of him by the hand. She led him to her bedroom. And very quietly, and very softly, and very gently, they made love.
I love you, Linda.
And I love you, Carter. I always have done.
That night it rained. The wind backed to the east and brought in squalls from the North Sea, and thin-shanked clouds limped across the dark-rimmed eye of the moon.
I'm happy, Daniel. I've never been so happy in the whole of my life.
All right. There's no need to set it to music. Don't get carried away. You know what happens round here when you get carried away by Crumpet?
Linda's not Crumpet, Daniel. Linda's different.
No, Carter. Nothing and no one's different round here. It's not allowed, lad. Everything's the same deep down. It's all variations of one single theme. Life's a load of old rubbish. You're better off dead like me.
You're wrong, Daniel. It's not like that with Linda.
Isn't it, Carter? You wait and see. You mark my words, me old Wingsy Bash. You and Linda, no mate. It'll turn out the same as it always does round here. Empty, useless, and totally rotten.
Next morning they ate a hearty breakfast, and Linda Preston said,
I think you'd best go home now, don't you?
I suppose so. Will you come with me?
Of course I will, kid.
When they arrived at Carter Brandon's house, they found Uncle Mort sitting in the lounge diner, eating a brown sauce sandwich and drinking a bottle of pale ale.
You wasn't in, so I let myself in and made a sandwich. I finished off the last of your corn chop, too.
You're welcome.
What's she doing here?
You're all right, Cock. I'm here as official observer of the ceasefire between him and Pat.
You're not involved with him, are you?
Of course I'm not. Totally impartial, me.
Good. Never get involved in human relationships. That's the secret of a happy and contented human life, is that? Right, then. I'll tell you me good news.
What good news?
I've had a canary.
What?
One of them eggs of mine. It's given birth to a sprog. I am now the proud father of a baby canary.
Warbler, warbler. How many more times have I got to tell you?
Uncle Mort smiled happily. He took off his cap, and there, huddled in his sparse and spiky grey hair, was a featherless, pink, panting nestling.
There. Who do you think it takes after?
Well, I think it's got your looks. When it grows up, it'll probably have your foul temper, too.
Jar very much. I'm right honoured and flattered. And I'll tell you something else.
What's that?
I think you're just right for Carter. I think you'll make the perfect couple. Providing you can get him to change his brand of brown sauce.
And so the days lengthened. Each evening, Carter Brandon met Linda Preston. They did not go out. They spent their time in her maisonette. They sat in each other's arms and talked.
When we grow up, how do you think we'll turn out, Carter?
Me? I'll grow all stooped and wizened. I'll grow a silky white beard, and I'll shuffle round in a dirty cardigan with holes in the elbows. And all in all, I'll be a right boring old codger.
And I'll still love you, Carter. I'll love you even more.
Hmm. What about you? What'll you be like when you grow old?
Me? Oh, I'll be all fat and blousy.
Honest?
Oh, aye. I'll have a backside like a battleship, and I'll have double chins and flabby arms, and me bosom will grow ginormous and all succulent. And you'll still love me, won't you, Carter?
Too true, mate. Too true, I will. I'll always love you.
Rubbish, Carter. Rubbish.
It is not rubbish, Daniel. This is real love. It's kind. It's gentle. It's smashing. It's just how it should be.
Aye, it is now, Carter. But you wait. Everything gets soured up round here sooner or later. Everything gets old and bitter and mucky before its time. They close down the factories. They close down love.
Not with me, Daniel. They won't do it to me.
Well, if you think that, you're an even bigger mug than I took you for.
One evening they went round to the shed on the allotment to meet Uncle Mort and Mr. Brandon. Uncle Mort showed them his nestling and said,
I wonder what happens to birds when they grow old. I mean, what'll happen to this poor little devil? Will it get corns on its toes like me? Will it drop things and bump its head and forget the names of its nearest and dearest?
No, love. It'll grow old like Carter. Its eyes will sparkle. It'll be as happy as Larry all day long, and it'll sing and sing at the top of its voice.
Poor devil, what a prospect.
Mr. Brandon took his son to one side and said,
I think Linda's a cracker, Carter. I think she's dead right for you. I envy you. Good-looking she is. No ambitions to better herself in a dry cleaner's. Good at darts, happy in the pub with a pint pot and a bag of crisps. Everything a man could desire in a woman. I'll try and keep your mother off the scent, but if I can't, watch out. Oh, my God, Carter, if she finds out, there'll be all hell let loose.
Later that night, Carter Brandon and Linda Preston lay side by side in bed. They were happy. They were replete with loving.
Carter?
Yes?
What would your mother say if she knew about us?
Who cares?
I do.
Well, forget it then.
No, Carter, I can't. What would your mum say about me?
Well, to be perfectly honest, she'd say you was right common. She'd say you was sullied because you'd been married before and didn't give a monkeys about lounge diners and joining the badminton club. She'd say you wasn't a patch on Pat.
Pat? That's the first time you've mentioned her since we've been together.
That's because I forgot all about her.
Have you, Carter? Have you really?
Of course I have.
No, you've not, Carter.
I have.
Don't kid yourself, Carter. She'll not go away that easy. She's waiting in the wings, ready to pounce. And just when you think you're shut of her, and life's going well, and happiness is just round the corner, she'll stick her beak in, and everything will be back to normal, all miserable and pinched.
You're wrong, Daniel. Pat's happy as she is. She's got what she's always wanted. Swanky home, swanky car, swanky bloke, security, status, soft toilet paper in the bogs. What does she want with me?
Plenty.
What?
You're a defeat, Carter. She's not been able to change you. You're still a slob, a layabout, a prize gumping bicycle clips and industrial boots. She'll not let you go that easy. It's an affront to her, mate. Linda Preston, she's common. She's happy with you as you are. She doesn't want to change you. She's content to pack your snap tin every morning and wipe the tie mark from the rim of the bath when you come home from the factory. And she's got big doodahs, and she's not afraid of showing them.
Linda's not like that, Daniel. You've got it all wrong.
I know she's not like that, Carter. Of course I do. But Pat doesn't. And that's why she'll come back, mate. You mark my words. Pat'll be back.
And she was. She came round early next morning to Carter Brandon's house.
I haven't heard from you for ages.
Fancy. Well, you'll be hearing from my legal adviser very soon, no doubt.
What about?
Getting divorced.
Oh, Carter, so it's come to this, has it?
That's right.
I always had such hopes about us, Carter. I used to dream of us growing old together. You'd be as handsome as ever you was, and we'd have the house paid for, and the garden would be all neat and tidy with petunias and mature rose bushes, and we'd have Christmas drinks at lunchtime with the neighbours, and you'd look so much younger than me when we went to the Panto on New Year's Eve. That's what went wrong with Mr. Macclesfield. He hasn't got no plans for growing old. All he's got is plans for growing elderly. And I think there's a world of difference between being old and being elderly, don't you, Carter? Is it Linda, Carter?
Pardon?
I thought it was. I thought it would be Linda. I've got a confession to make, Carter.
What?
I want to come home.
I see.
I want to come back home, Carter. I've missed you something terrible with your thoughtlessness and not cutting your toenails and not taking no interest in a mortgage protection policy. And, oh, Carter, despite everything, I know we're made for each other. I know it. And I want to come home. Please let me, Carter. Please, please, please.
Ta-ra. See you around sometime, maybe.
It was Midsummer's Day. He went to Linda Preston's maisonette. They made love. The sun shone through the open curtains. A butterfly beat aimlessly at the dusty window pane.
What's wrong with you, Carter? You're very quiet. Is there something on your mind?
No.
Is it Pat?
Pardon?
They fell silent. The butterfly fell to the floor. The curtains sagged. He asked her to marry him. She said she would. They kissed.
I love you, Linda.
And I love you, Carter.
They made plans for their marriage. They laughed. They made love once more. On his way home, Carter Brandon sang at the top of his voice.
You see, Daniel? You see? You see?
Oh, yes, Carter. I see it all. Very clearly. Well, that's because I'm dead, you see.
The sun blazed down endlessly. There were moorland fires. Grouse died of thirst. And then one day, Carter Brandon received two items of news. First, he heard that Uncle Mort's warbler had died. It had trapped itself in the cigarette machine in the back room of the Whippet. And then a policeman came to his house and said...
Mr. Brandon?
Yes?
Mr. Carter Brandon?
Yes?
I'm afraid I have some bad news for you, sir. I'm sorry to inform you that your son has been involved in a serious car accident. I'm afraid, sir, that he has been killed.
Oh, well. And what about Pat? What about my wife?
Oh, she's safe, sir. She was not involved in the accident. Your son was killed in a car which was driven by a Mr. Macclesfield, who I regret to say was also killed.
Where did it happen?
Wilson's Bar, sir. It's a well-known accident, Black Spot.
I know.
The funeral was sad and simple. Pat held Carter Brandon's hand throughout the service. As the mourners began to sprinkle soil into the dank, dark hole of the grave, Uncle Mort stepped forward and placed the corpse of the mourning warbler, wrapped in a red and white spotted handkerchief, on top of the coffin.
You don't mind, do you, Carter? When all's said and done, it's only a harmless canary.
Warbler. It's a warbler.
He led Pat silently to the funeral limousine. Just as they were about to step inside, he said,
Well, I suppose we might as well get back together again, mightn't we?
If you want to.
Aye. I suppose we'd better.
The limousine drove away. At the top of Halifax Road, Carter Brandon tapped the driver on the shoulder and asked him to stop.
You go on back home, Pat. I'll join you later. I've got some business to attend to.
Linda Preston was waiting for him.
I know, Carter. I know. There's no need to say out.
She led him to her bedroom. They undressed. They made love. When they'd finished, they lit cigarettes.
Nothing ever changes round here, does it, Carter?
No.
That little bird of your uncle's. Its mum and dad flew hundreds and thousands of miles to find a change in life. And all that happens is that their baby goes and snuffs it in a pub. Just like all of us. Poor little canary.
Warbler. For God's sake. Warbler. Warbler. Warbler.
In Call It a Canary by Peter Tinniswood, Christian Rodsker was the narrator. Philip Jackson played Carter, George A. Cooper, Mr. Brandon, Shelley Dixon, Mrs. Brandon, Stephen Thorne, Uncle Mort, and Liz Goulding, Pat. Sally Baxter was Linda Preston, Judy Bennett, Daniel, Anne Cunningham, Hazel Huskinson, Jane Hollywood, Dorothy Fernley, Colin Edwin, Sid Skelhorn, and Sylvia Brachet, the nurse. The play was produced from the Northwest by Tony Cliff. And if you're a keen fan of the Brandon family, you might like to know that in the first of a new series on BBC One tomorrow evening, they accompany their creator, all rumpled and content with his pipe, as he begins a three-part journey to the places of his childhood and youth. Their first stop is Scarborough, the Brandon's favourite seaside resort, which also has special meaning for Peter Tinniswood. That's Tinniswood Country at 7 o'clock tomorrow evening on BBC One. And in this week's Radio Times, Uncle Mort describes the experience of filming for 4 weeks with Peter Tinniswood. And in this week's edition of The Listener out on Thursday, Peter Tinniswood himself writes about their first trip to Scarborough.